lay for something to do, and not because he's contemplating using it. No, he says at last, to all questions. My heart calms somewhat. He really has no reason to lie to me. If he were going to kill me, I suppose he would just be done with it. How is it that you're able to touch that sword, but not me? Can he not be touched by living things? That would make consummating a marriage very difficult indeed. But then, I felt the pressure of his glove against my cheek. In the span of a blink, the shadows disappear. All that is left is Callias. Real. Human. Corporeal. Touchable. Beautiful. In another blink, he's back to being surrounded by shadow. I can turn the ability on and off, he says. I can force my fingers to solidify in order to pick something up, while the rest of me remains intangible. But why the law? I ask. If no one can hurt you, why forbid people from touching you? Why bother with gloves? Does that pain you? To touch someone skin to skin? It does not pain me to touch anyone, unless they're maiming me in some way. Then why? I want to scream. Why push everyone away? Why isolate himself from everyone? Why live alone and untouched? If I were to touch someone skin to skin when I'm not in my shadow form, my ability would go away whenever I'm in their presence. I would be corporeal any time they were around. I would be susceptible to death and pain and all else. My father lived to be over 300 years old, a long and lonely life, until he decided to marry my mother. Then he was mortal. She was the anchor keeping him grounded, and anyone could assassinate him while my mother was near. And they did, he finishes. Falling in love is what got him killed. Now you see why I wish to appease the council without actually fulfilling their wishes. Someone killed my parents, and they will do the same to me if I let myself get close to anyone. Sometimes I even wonder if my brother's death wasn't an accident. I dare not say anything, for fear he'll stop confiding in me. He wasn't like me, you see, Callias says. The ability passes from parent to child. But my brother Xanthos? He didn't get the ability. I believe that's why he died so young. Someone wanted to take him out of the line of succession. My father was much more protected. It took longer to find a way to end him. I can hardly believe he's trusting me with so much, but I also can't help but wonder if this is some sort of test. I say, when you barged into my room that night, you wanted to know exactly what I'd said, because if people thought we were touching, they'd come after me, he finishes, and I'd have to be ever on alert. Why are you telling me all this? I ask. Are you sure you're not going to kill me? You're right, Alessandra. Last night, all of those things you said. I've been afraid to truly live. Being with you outside of closely observed mealtimes makes me vulnerable. If someone learns my secret, if we were to accidentally touch, I could be killed. But that's no way to live. I may not be allowed to ever have someone physically close to me, but that doesn't mean I can't let you in. I like you. And I hope that you could like me, too. Something in me softens. There's something about looking on this dark, powerful man and hearing his hopes for us. It makes me want to make those hopes become real. Right before I end his life, of course. So you're taking me, I ask, to one of my favorite spots. We're spending time together. Outside the palace, and not because it will further convince the council of our courtship, although that is a benefit. We're doing it because we're friends, and you deserve some real fun. Last night was fun. Some fun with me, he clarifies, his jaw setting. No more nights with Leandros. I raise a brow. I'm trying to compromise. I'm spending time with you, and we can't have the council finding out you're sharing your favor with more than one man. Fine, I say, but I reserve the right to see whomever I wish if you start behaving like an ass again. Sometimes I wonder if it's just a matter of time before I go too far, before I say something to finally push him over the edge and get rid of me for good. But I've found that during all our conversations, I haven't had to pretend. When I say things, it's because I truly feel and think that way. I may be trying to win the heart of a king, but I'm still being myself. That's never happened before with a Mark. That's fair, he says. I reward him with the most charming smile I can find, and it isn't faked in the least. Do you think I could sit next to you? I ask, so I don't fall out of my seat again. The incline is steep. He scoots to one side of the plush cushion in answer. I settle next to him, only my skirts brushing his shadows. Much better. Thank you. Chapter 15. When the carriage rolls to a stop, the driver climbs down from his perch and opens the door for me, holding out an arm to help me down the single step. Today's overskirt is thin, a green assortment with fabric that glitters in the sun. The pants beneath are fitted and dotted with gathered black fabric in the imitation of flower petals. I never got a chance to compliment you on your attire. This is one of the few outfits I haven't worn yet. I was angry at you and didn't want to wear your favorite color. But then you wore it anyway. I thought it might make you angrier when you were forced to watch me leave with all my things. He smiles. It would have. He turns to the driver. Go for a walk. We won't need your assistance for some time. We'll return when we're ready. The driver nods before heading for a trail to the left of the carriage. It disappears into a cover of trees. Callias retrieves his rapier from the carriage and ties it to his belt. Then he grabs a large woven basket from atop the carriage. This way, he says. As he grasps the basket in one hand, the reeds suddenly fade, the shadows eating them up, until the whole thing is just as encased in them as the king is. When you touch something, it becomes intangible with you? I ask. I have to grasp it with a corporeal hand. Then, when I turn to shadow, the object will turn with me. A blessing, he adds. Else the cord would have quite a stirring when my clothes fell right through me. I can't help but laugh lightly at that. The grass is soft and silent beneath my feet as Callias leads me in the opposite direction of the driver. The ground rolls up and down with the hills. I'm grateful for my pant-clad legs and the sturdier boots I happen to don today. Aren't you worried about being alone up here? I ask. Why would I be? I can't be hurt. But I can. Don't worry. Several riders followed us at a discreet distance. We took a plain carriage instead of the royal carriage. My men are roaming the edges of this spot, out of sight. Besides, no one travels this way unless they're trying to cross the pass into another kingdom. And why would they do that? Invaders can't make it through to our end because there are men stationed on the other side of the mountain. I don't wear this sword just for looks, he adds. I do know how to use it. Rest assured, the only dangerous thing out here is me. And should I fear you? I ask. Never. Over the next rise, I spot a large oak tree, the branches providing a lovely shade from the warm air. A few dozen feet away, a lake rests, ripples forming from bugs dancing on the water's surface or a fish making a brief appearance. A field of daffodils surrounds us, the golden petals swaying in the breeze, coloring the whole place in what would make a perfect painting. It's giving me ideas for dress designs. Next time we come here, I'll have to bring a sketchbook. From the basket, Callias removes a red and white checkered blanket, spreading it beneath the shade of the tree. He settles his lean body atop it, crossing his legs beneath him before rummaging through the other contents. I settle down next to him, close, but not close enough to touch. It's beautiful here, I say. My mother used to sneak Xanathos and me out here as boys. We'd play in the mud, catch frogs, pick the flowers. She was never too busy for us, despite being a queen. She sounds like fun. She was. I miss her. He sweeps his eyes over the daffodils. She loved flowers. To this day, the groundskeepers take extra measures to maintain her flower gardens outside the palace. He's finally opening up. This is exactly what I need to draw us closer. I'm sorry, I say. I lost my mother, too. I was 11 when illness took her. For some reason, I barely remember her. Mostly, I remember my governess. I didn't see my mother often. Father loved her deeply. And I can't stand my father, so I wonder if maybe I wouldn't have liked her if I had known her well. I'm so sorry you lost yours. Thank you. He lets out a breath. But I didn't bring you here to talk about such dreary things. We're here to eat. He waves a hand over all the food he has laid out before us. There's enough to feed 20 people. I spot at least 5 different kinds of sandwiches, from cucumber to shredded pork, strawberries with the stems cut off, and some sort of chocolate sauce for dipping. Chicken legs spiced with rosemary, leafy greens shredded with tomatoes and carrots, clusters of grapes. My mouth waters at the sight of it all. Callias and I enjoy our food, and this time he listens carefully as I give him blow-by-blow details of last night. I'm proud of the bets I won. I find myself wanting to tell him how I learned the ticks of those around me and used it to my advantage. You sound like you'd be an excellent general. Perhaps I should fire Kaiser and hire you instead. I lick chocolate sauce from my fingers. I'm afraid I have no knowledge of weaponry, though I do always carry a dagger on me. The one I used to kill Hector. That's good. One must always be prepared for the unforeseeable. He leans back, enjoying a full stomach, and the two of us just relish in being alone, being free of the palace, free of responsibility in this beautiful place. I wish I would have thought to pack us swimwear. The water is so refreshing this time of year, he says. Who says we need suits? I ask. Your outfit is constricting, and the overskirt would consume water like a sponge to drown you. I hadn't meant for us to keep our clothes on. The words are out before I realize they might be too forward. Callias turns to me, a wicked grin on his face. Why, Lady Alessandra, the more I learn about you, the more I like you. He stands, grabs the neckline at the back of his cotton shirt, and pulls it off in one movement. He looks down at me, calling my bluff, daring me to undress. I'm only distracted for a moment by the expanse of muscles visible on his chest. They were hidden so well under that loose shirt. Under the layers of vests and waistcoats he's usually to be found in. But now he's on display, and I decide it's his best look. I keep my eyes on his as I undo the buttons on my overskirt. Once undone, I shrug off the garment, so I'm clad only in those pants and a tight sleeveless blouse. Your guards? I ask. They're out of sight, he says, his voice growing deeper with each word. Then, as though it takes him great effort, he turns around. Turns around. What the devils? What are you doing? I ask. I'm waiting for my friend to undress and get in the water. Oh, is that how it's going to be? Is that the truth of things between us, or is Callias trying to force that distinction on our relationship? Making as much noise as I possibly can, I shrug out of my boots and pants, slip off my blouse and under things, and then I approach the water, wondering if His Majesty will peek. If it's just an act, or if he thinks to catch me unawares. He doesn't even fidget. The Shadow King is such a spoil sport. The water is cold at first, but after a few seconds, I grow used to it daring to go deeper and deeper until all the important parts are covered. I'm in, I tell him. He turns around and makes a twirling motion with his fingers. My turn to look away while he removes the rest of his clothing. My toes dig into the smooth mud as I face the other direction. I keep my thoughts away from all the critters living in the lake, and instead try to imagine what Callias looks like naked. All that bronze skin and lean muscle. I'm so lost in thought that I jump when I hear steps behind me. You can look now, he says. The water is so murky, I could stand right in front of Callias and not see anything under the water. More's the pity. He said he couldn't touch. He said nothing about looking. So why should he wish to avert his gaze? And why the hell did he force me to turn around? Suddenly put out, I hurry to think of something to say before our outing turns awkward. Do the shadows make it easier to float? I ask him. Yes, actually. He's only up to his waist, giving me a nice view of his torso. There's not a mark on him, not a scar or freckle in sight. How is he so perfect? A silence builds as we both think about the obvious. We're naked, in a lake, doing nothing untoward. How is this my life right now? I need to say something else, but all of the topics racing through my mind are terribly inappropriate. Are you a virgin? I ask. Well done, Alessandra. But he seems beyond amused by the question. No. Are you? I should say yes. A lady's entire reputation hinges on that fact, as I well know. But the way he asks, in earnest, I can't help but wonder. Would it matter if I wasn't? I dare to ask. Not at all, he says immediately. My lips part. But it's practically an unspoken law that ladies must be virgins on their wedding nights. It's no law of mine. In fact, I've made a point of doing my best to give ladies the same rights as men. It's what my mother would have wanted. And besides, how can men expect all the ladies to remain virgins while they don't? The numbers don't add up. He's serious. All this time I worried about Myron ruining things when I needn't have bothered at all. First thing when we get back, I'm calling in his debts. No, I say at last, I'm not a virgin. Then I hurry to add, so you permit yourself to touch people after all, then? I used to, before I was king. And the ladies in question are not around to counteract your ability? When I was younger, he explains, I paid handsomely for the attentions of women, courtesans mostly, who I then gave small fortunes to so they could start their lives over in one of the other five kingdoms. That's smart, I tell him. He looks down at the water, watching droplets fall from his fingers. I almost wish I hadn't. Then I would never know what I was missing. Perhaps I should be sympathetic. Instead, I ask, you've been celibate for an entire year? Yes. And you plan to remain celibate? There might be unnecessary pauses between each of the words, but I can't help it. Surely it's not worth it. He shrugs. I am the most powerful man in the world, and I will live forever. I imagine men would give up a lot more for immortality alone. What would I give up for such power? I suppose it doesn't matter. All I have to do is invest my time. There's nothing I have to give up. Where did this shadow ability originate? I ask. My family has been ruling since the dawn of time, or so I've been told. One of my ancestors, his name was Bachnamon, struggled to maintain his throne. Many attempts were made on his life. His own cousin tried to usurp him. He prayed to the gods for help first, the god of strength, the god of wisdom, the god of justice. He asked for the strength to maintain his power, to be strong enough to destroy his enemies. He wanted his line to remain in power forever. None answered. So he prayed to the devils next. The devil of suffering. The devil of vengeance. The devil of pain. The last one answered. Bakhnaman was granted the power of the shadows. He was invulnerable to death and pain so long as he remained in his shadow form. But because the ability was gifted by a devil, it was not without its price. He was granted immortality so long as he spent most of his days in shadow. But if he didn't, the ability would be passed on to his children. I stand there, digesting that all for a moment while watching tendrils of shadow snake up his arms. I look up to his eyes, only to find him watching a drop of water slide down my shoulder. He coughs. Now it's my turn for questions. Tell me of the men lucky enough to receive your favors. Was there more than one? And then his voice changes. Do you have a bow waiting for you now? The question seems to dawn on him with horror. I have no one right now, but as I said, I grew up receiving little attention from my family, so I sought it elsewhere. Oh, Alessandra, if only I'd known you sooner. I would never ignore you. Such a gallant king. How many men? He wants to know. Dozens. Instead of answering, I shoot back, how many women? Somehow, I think our answers might be similar. All right, keep your answer and I'll keep mine, he says. Fair enough. Now may I swim? Certainly. But if I reach the other side of the lake before you do, you owe me an answer to any question I ask. Deal, I say at the same time I spring for the other side. Damn him. He wins. I want to hear about the first boy, he says. How did it start and end? The only thoughts of Hector Galanus I have are when I reminisce upon his death. The beginning of our relationship is something I haven't thought on much. He was the fifth son of a baron, I start, and I realize that perhaps I shouldn't use the past tense when speaking about him. I'm practically admitting that I know he's dead, and an investigation is being conducted. I need to take better care with my words. My father had business with his father, I continue. He came over to our estate with the rest of his brothers. The older ones all chased after Chrysantha the moment they arrived, but Hector singled me out, and I was drawn to him because of that fact alone. I was 15. I didn't have any experience with men at the time. I'd hardly seen any, sequestered at home as I was. I devoured Hector's compliments. I relished in his nearness, and the second time his father came to call, he led me to a quiet corner of the house and kissed me. The next time, he undressed me. Callias is perhaps the best listener I've ever encountered. He can be so still, his shadow is stilling with him. It went on for 2 months. During that time, I thankfully had a maid who taught me how to prevent pregnancy. I learned the ways of the bedroom. Hector was more than happy to instruct and pleasure me, until he found someone new. Someone else, fresh and inexperienced and willing to bed him. So then it ended. I pause, thinking I'm done here, but then I feel prompted to add, and then I vowed I would never fall in love again. So every man after Hector was used and discarded once I became bored with him. I find a cold spot in the water, and I shift back over a few feet. I don't know if Callias is disturbed by what I told him, or if he doesn't know how to respond, but I ask, have you ever been in love? No, he says, not ever. What's it like? Horrible. The silence grows, but not in an unpleasant way. I feel closer to Callias than I've ever been before, exposed in a way that has nothing to do with my nakedness. A spot of movement catches my attention. Who's that? I ask, looking over Callias's head. Is that one of your guards? Callias turns in place, looking back toward the shore and the hefty remains of our lunch still left there. No, he says. Alessandra, stay where you are. Callias cleaves the water in wide strokes as he draws closer to shore, toward the figure hovering over our picnic, staring down at its contents. I think it's a man, but it's difficult to tell with the attire he wears. A cloak hides much of his figure. A hood conceals his face. Halt! Kalia shouts, his torso coming out of the water while the rest of him remains submerged. What do you think you're doing? The man turns, his hood falling away. Not that it reveals anything. A brown cloth covers his face from the nose up, only two slits allowing his eyes to see through.
So much food for only two people, the man says, his voice unusually deep, as though he's trying to mask its true timber. Surely you've had your fill, and the poor grow hungrier by the minute. I will see that your leftovers are distributed to those who need it most.
It's him, the masked bandit who accosted the nobles. The man in the brown mask gathers the blanket by the corners, sweeping all the food to the center. He places the entire bulge back into the discarded basket.
That is the property of the king, Kalia shouts back at him. You will unhand it immediately. It's the king who demands too high of taxes so he can maintain troops in all the lands he's conquered. While you start new wars in harmless kingdoms, your own people suffer. It's time you took care of those who need your protection the most.
Without another word, the bandit leaps onto the back of a waiting horse and starts galloping for the nearest hill. Callias turns back to me.
Get dressed, quickly.
He races the rest of the way out of the water, yelling for his guards. I realize I'm staring once he reaches down to grab his pants, jumping into them seamlessly.
Hurry, he shouts to me again, then rushes back for the carriage.
Needing no further prompting, I swim for the shore, wringing out my hair, trying to shake the droplets of water from my skin. My clothes don't go on easily. Everything is tight, unwilling to slide over wet skin. After much struggling, I finally get myself covered up and race after Callias. Chapter 16.
How the hell did he get past you?
Kalia shouts at some 10 men surrounding the carriage. Our driver has returned, carrying a bouquet of wildflowers he likely meant to take home to a sweetheart. But Kalia pays him no mind.
You are paid for one job, to protect your king, and you failed. How? What the devils were you all doing?
Half of the men turned toward me.
We were unprepared for the, distraction,
one of the men says. Am I to understand you failed to protect me because you weren't paying the lady the respect she deserves?
You can hardly blame us, sire. She was naked.
Kalia steps forward, draws his sword, and puts it through the one who spoke. The man looks down at the rapier stuck in his gut, eyes wide. He falls as Kalia draws his sword back out. I'm reminded of Hector and the last breaths he took. It's the only time I've ever seen death. Until now. The rest of the guards step back, likely worried that they'll be next.
Anyone else wish to offer up excuses?
Callias asks in a quiet voice. No one says a word.
You, Callias points to one of the guards. Ride ahead and gather my council. We meet as soon as I return.
During the return carriage ride, Callias has the back of his hand pressed to his lips as he thinks. He stares off into some corner, not avoiding me, just lost in his own thoughts.
Forgive me, he says, suddenly looking up. You should not have seen that. I shouldn't have, in front of a lady. What must you think of me now?
I've been perfectly calm the entire time. I didn't feel as though I were in danger when the bandit attacked, not from the safety of the water, and I find Callias's question perplexing. I believe you now, I say. You do know how to use that sword. His expression turns incredulous.
You're not frightened of me?
You defended my honor. Why should I fear you?
Because I killed a man in front of you.
I shrug. You have to make tough decisions as king. You have to put down those who disobey you. Make an example of them. It's how you maintain order. You think I don't know that?
I still shouldn't have done it in front of you. He looks away.
Callias. His gaze focuses on me once more. I do not fear the decisions you have to make as a king, and I would never think lesser of you for them. I'm surprised you killed only one of them, to be honest.
His voice lowers. The rest will die as well, but I can't very well do it when I'm outnumbered, and when we have to rely on them for protection on the road back.
The carriage draws to a halt in front of the palace, and Callias jumps out. He's barefoot, clad only in pants as the rest of his clothing was left behind in our haste. Not that it's easy to tell. He has his shadows out in full force. Every inch of bare skin is haloed by smoky blackness. I follow after him, and he says nothing as we tread up some stairs, down corridors, through doors. Ladies and servants startle at the sight of his bare chest and storming shadows as we pass them, until at last we find ourselves in a meeting room. 5 individuals are seated at a large table. Callias takes the 6th seat, at the head.
Icaros, fetch Lady Stathos a seat.
If the rest of the council thinks anything of my presence, they say nothing. Leandros's uncle grabs a chair from the outskirts of the room and places it at the corner of the table, next to the king.
This masked bandit problem has gone on long enough, Callias says once I'm seated. How has our plan to catch him progressed?
I hardly think Callias is unnerved by the loss of some food. No, it is the fact that someone stole from the king, that this bandit would dare challenge his monarch. The problem has become personal, and Callias must deal with it immediately.
The coins are finished, Lady Terzi says, and I've allowed word to slip that they will be transported soon, Lady Mangus says.
Icaros Vasco steeples his fingers over the table.
If the bandit has been spotted so close to the palace, then surely he intends to take the bait.
Once he strikes and redistributes the gold, my troops will be ready to round up the peasants caught with them.
This from Kaiser.
Ampelio shifts in a seat. And then I'll be ready to question them. We'll get him, sire.
Callias takes a few moments just to breathe, to think everything through. If any of the council members think anything of his partial nakedness or the dampness of our clothing, they wisely say nothing.
Good, Callias says. I want daily reports on how this progresses. And Kaiser, see that all the men who accompanied us on our outing are hanged.
The sitting room is abuzz with gossip the next day. I know immediately that it's about me, as everyone goes quiet as soon as I enter the room with my latest sewing project, the top to match my high-low skirt. I've decided on something form-fitting and low-cut down the front. A few ladies hurriedly pick up their embroidery and try to look busy. Others stare, but my good friends have nothing but smiles for me.
We saved you a seat, Rhoda says,
her fingers pointing to a cushioned chair across from her. Light conversation starts up as I take the proffered spot.
Spill,
Hestia says when my rump barely hits the cushion. I look to Rhoda for help.
You were swimming with the king, Rhoda says,
and the room goes quiet, holding their breath and waiting for me to divulge the whole story. I say, and we were naked. Hestia's hands go to cover her mouth, while Rhoda grins with delight. He was a perfect gentleman, I assure the room, even though I'm directing my attention to my friends. Didn't touch me. Didn't even look as I undressed. A girl on the other side of the room coughs into her hand.
For your sake, I hope a proposal is underway. No other man will have you now, whether you two were chaste or not. Naked is naked.
Another girl gasps at her remark, hardly daring she would be so bold with the king's bow.
I had a nice talk with the king about virginity, I say,
and I proceed to rehash the conversation. At the end, I say, considering at least half of you have already given yourselves to men, I should think you grateful that you no longer have to keep your exploits a closely guarded secret. I certainly won't bother to do so with mine. In fact, this morning,
I called in my debt to Myron. He has a month to get the money to me before I hand the case over to the constabulary. It's only a moment after I say the words that the whole room floods with new gossip. This time, of ladies sharing their secret exploits with others in the room or their wishes for such trysts. Satisfied with what I've started, I turn back to Rhoda and Hestia. And here I thought I was being bold coming out of mourning so soon, Rhoda says. You're changing everything. I shrug. I merely think we should be afforded the same rights as the men, even in the bedroom. When breakfast is served, I'm not yet dressed, still clad in a nightgown. This one is black and form-fitting. Though the short sleeves cover my shoulders, the silky material opens on each side of my abdomen, from my lowest ribs to below my hips. I chose the design because men do so love to use my hips and waist as handholds when kissing me senseless. I brush my hair out of my face before entering the sitting room to break my fast. Callias stands from the breakfast table as soon as I open the door, and his eyes immediately go to the openings in my nightgown, where he can see the smooth skin at my second-best curves. My maid didn't inform me you were joining me this morning, I say by way of explanation. I'll go put on a robe. No, he objects. I raise a brow. I mean, I'm the intruder. You may wear whatever you wish in your own rooms. He drags his eyes to my face. Are you up for company this morning? Certainly. I take the seat opposite him. Your nightwear is different, he adds. It's breathable. Do you get overheated when you sleep? Only when I'm not sleeping alone. Callias turns his head toward my door. There's no one else in there, I say. I didn't mean I'd had company last night. He returns his gaze to me. You say that almost wistfully. Well, now that we're being honest about my past exploits, it's been a long time. Longer than it's been for me? Devils, no! He stares at me, and I find myself laughing at the conversation. Just how long has it been for you? He wants to know. Truth or lie? Just over a month. He blinks. He tries to start a new sentence, but stops himself three times before. Anyone I know? He was a nobody. Someone to amuse myself with to pass the time while I waited for Chrysantha to become engaged. A silence spreads between us as we dance around such a dangerous topic. Finally, he blurts, A month? A month is long for you? Not all of us have as much self-control as you do. I'm not so in control as you might think. He looks down at the shredded potatoes on the table, our untouched breakfast. Oh, are you dallying with some lady in secret? The words come out friendly and aloof, but for some reason, I start to see red at the corners of my vision. That's not what I meant. Callias puts a bite of food into his mouth and chews slowly, as though giving himself an excuse not to say more. He's saved by a knock at the door. A maid goes to answer before returning with a letter for me. Put it on my desk. I'll attend to it later, I tell her. No, Callias says hurriedly. Please, don't let me keep you from your correspondence. It might be important. He's stalling for more time. All right. I'll indulge him. I take up the letter and read.
To Lady Alessandra Stathos. I'm looking into the disappearance of my son, Hector, who has been absent since July 27, 3 years past. I have learned that you may have had some sort of relationship with my son, and it is my hope that you might have more information concerning his disappearance. As a favor to me, will you please come to my estate so we can talk? I'd hate to bring this matter into the king's home. Sincerely, Faustus Galanus, Baron of Drivas.
I don't miss the blatant threat. Come to me or else I'll come to you.
Something wrong?
Callias asks. I look up and gather my thoughts quickly. It's an invitation to the Baron of Drevis's estate. Not a lie. Oh, I know of the Baron, but I can't say I've seen him more than a handful of times. But if you wish to go, I would be honored to accompany you. My knuckles whiten on the letter. Callias thinks I've been invited to a party or some event. Of course he does. And he's trying to show that he's all in now on our ruse. Actually, the Baron makes me uncomfortable. At that word, I have Callias's undivided attention. Has he done something untoward? He's been talking with my father and my sister. Now he's all but threatened to come to the palace if I don't come to him. I think he's up to something. I have done my best not ever to lie to Callias. Lies are far too easy to get caught up in, far too easy to discover. I let Callias draw his own conclusions from my words. The Baron has many sons, does he not? Callias asks. He does, I say with resignation. Perhaps I should have a talk with him about how you are unavailable. Oh, please don't make an issue of it, I say. But if it's not too much to ask, should he attempt to come to the palace? I won't let the guards admit him. Say nothing more. I relax. As long as I'm in Callias's confidence, I needn't worry about the Baron. Hector will not ruin this for me. Callias returns to his breakfast while I think through a reply for the Baron. I'll assure him that despite what he's heard, I barely knew his son, and am afraid I have no information to assist in his search. Then I will pass along my regrets. Yes, that should take care of things for now. I certainly can't leave the palace to deal with this issue myself. Not when things are finally turning around for Callias and me. I see Callias again at lunch. Twice in one day. You will be happy to know that both of your plans are progressing splendidly, he says to me, while a servant brings a fresh bowl of soup for the king. The people of Pagai have cast their votes for representation on the council. The newly appointed voice of the people is being followed discreetly everywhere he goes. We will know all the ringleaders of the revolt soon enough. As for the bandit, he struck this morning and took the freshly stamped coins. We will begin searching nearby towns for the gold first thing tomorrow. Callias's leg bounces underneath the table. He's in a very fine mood. A wave of pleasure washes over me at his words. Excellent. I would be very interested to remain informed on both situations. Of course. I'm beginning to realize there is nothing I care to keep from you anymore. An amiable silence sits between us as we enjoy the food. At one point, I find Callias watching me out of the corner of my eye. When I turn my head, he only grins when caught staring. What are you looking at? That should be obvious. Perhaps you'd like to ask me what I'm thinking instead. His eyes are liquid fire, and I wonder just how dangerous it might be to ask that very question. But I do anyway. I'm thinking, he answers, that you are quite beautiful, and every man at this table wishes he were me right now. My stomach starts to flutter. You are king. Every man does wish he were you. No, every man wishes he had you at his side. You said I wasn't beautiful enough to be tempting, I remind him. He takes his napkin from his lap and brushes his fingers against it. I lied. You're the most stunning thing to ever set foot in my palace. Our eyes hold. I'm helpless but to maintain the connection sizzling between us. And though I know he won't break the law, not yet, for me, knowing that I have some hold on him brings a slow smile to my lips. He stares down at them, at the red stain that graces my skin. Why are you telling me this? I ask finally. And then I realize. You don't want me to spend any more time with Leandros. He admits, I want to keep you all to myself. I shouldn't be surprised at all that a king would be selfish, demanding, even cruel at times. But he is other things as well. He is intelligent, handsome, and giving. And he is not entirely unchangeable. He is changing his ways already for me. I think, Your Majesty, that all this talk of past indulgences is getting to your head. Perhaps I'm simply in a good mood. Everything is going quite splendidly. And it is all due to me. Really, everyone should be quite glad when I am the one ruling all the kingdoms. When Callias excuses himself sometime later, his back hasn't even disappeared around the exit of the Great Hall before Hestia and Rhoda take the empty seats near me. I heard the king dined in your rooms this morning, Hestia says with a waggle of her eyebrows. He did, but that was all. Breakfast. No new gossip for me, then? I'm afraid not. Oh, very well. We shall have to turn to less exciting gossip to occupy our afternoon. How about we talk of all the dancing you did at last night's ball? Rhoda asks. With Lord Paulos. With everything else that's been going on, I neglected to ask my friends about the event I missed. It seems things went very well for Hestia. It was only a couple of dances, Hestia says. It was nothing, truly. If that's the case, then why is he watching you right now? What? Hestia swivels her head around in time to catch the man who must be Lord Paulos quickly look away. He's a bit older than she is, with a little gray at his temples, but still quite handsome. I grin. See, Rhoda continues, and I happen to overhear him tell his friends how you smelled like a berry patch in spring. Men don't say things like that unless they're smitten.
They don't?
Hestia looks down at the wood grain of the table and grins shyly. And he obviously very much enjoyed the conversation you shared. What did you talk about?
Well, I started by discussing the latest fashions in the palace, but somehow the conversation morphed into talk of gaming.
Gaming? Rhoda repeats.
My father loves to play cards, and he taught me. Lord Paulos and I were rehearsing some of our favorite moves seen played in the game of Hatch. We both are obsessed with the strategy of the game. I know it wasn't very ladylike of me to discuss such things, but it was so terribly fun.
Sometimes Hestia can be quite silly, but I know she is an only child, with an absent mother and a father who wasn't quite sure how to raise a daughter. She may be trying to imitate me in the extreme, but part of me wonders if she is so afraid of doing or saying the wrong thing that she thinks imitating others is the only way to be safe. Then it's not her who is the one being rejected. Hestia, I say, do you know how I was able to catch the king's attention? She shakes her head. By being myself. By discussing what I wished to discuss and behaving how I wished to behave and wearing what I wished to wear. It is not conforming to a standard that drew His Majesty's attention. If you wish to make a happy match, I think you should do the same. Don't be afraid of who you are. Say what you wish. Be who you wish. Don't try to be someone else. You don't want to catch a man who wants me. You want to catch a man who wants you. Hestia blinks a few times before looking down at the clothes she's wearing. The ones that resemble my close-fitted dress from last week. She takes a full minute to think while staring at the smooth fabric about her waist. Suddenly she rises, walks over to Lord Paulos, and takes the empty seat right next to him. Rhoda takes up her empty seat so we can converse more easily. I've been trying to tell her the same thing for years. I think it just needed to come from the future queen.
Do you expect we'll hear news of an engagement soon?
I expect we will. We both lean back in our seats, letting our eyes trail down to Lord Paulos, who is now laughing at whatever Hestia has just said.
What of you? I ask. Any progress on your search for passion?
Oh, I'm having a dreadful time of it.
How can that be?
Rhoda brushes a black curl over her shoulder. I have come up with a ranking system for men who are in the running, but none of them are quite what I want.
You must tell me of this system you've devised, I say, thoroughly intrigued by the conversation.
I have come up with three different categories by which to judge men. They are looks, manners, and personality. Each category is ranked from 1 to 5, 1 being a low score and 5 being a high score. Now, take Lord Tolly's, for example. With his sculptured features and dark complexion, he is an easy 5 ranking in looks. He's fairly polite and thoughtful, resulting in a 3 in manners. But personality? Oh, he's as dry as a lake during a drought. Overall, he ranks only 9 out of 15. How fascinating! What would your ideal future husband rank overall? At least a 13, don't you think? I ponder it a moment. Definitely. If we were only talking of betting men, I would say you need to look only for 5s in the good looks category. If you were looking for a friend, all you would need is a 5 in the personality department. If you're hoping for an escort to an event, then you would need only a 5 in manners. Perhaps looks as well, if you're trying to leave a good impression. But for a love match? Definitely at least a 13. Rhoda nods. I thought Lord Cossie would be the one after the last party. Did you know he and I danced 3 times together? Not in a row, of course, but 3 in total. He's a 4.5 in looks, and a 3.5 in personality. But manners? When I begged a break from the dancing because I was thirsty, he didn't bother to offer to grab something from the refreshment table. He only went in search of a different dance partner. Can you believe that? An outrage, I say. My thoughts exactly. Lord Ducas has been after me for a while, but he's only a 2 in looks. If we're being kind, she adds in a whisper. The man is a 5 in both manners and personality, so it's a real shame. I don't like to think of myself as being shallow, but surely I should find a man I think is attractive if I'm to pursue him. I agree. Rhoda sighs. Sometimes I don't think there are enough men at court, and I'm convinced the perfect man doesn't exist. Without prompting, Callias's visage rises to the front of my mind. The perfect symmetry of his face, the dark volume of his hair, his intelligent and bright green eyes, the view of his bare chest and bare other things. I think of our teasing and joking, our discussions of betting and reaching for the things we want. I think of the way he waited for me to arrive before starting on his dinner, how he waited up for me when I went out with Leandros. Callias has his flaws. Oh, so many flaws. I think of his temper, of his selfishness to keep me to himself, even though he doesn't want all of me. Mouth dry, I say. I don't think it's necessarily about finding the perfect man, but finding the perfect man for you. One person may rank a man far differently than another, even if they are both using your ranking system. But what? Rhoda asks. The king is a 15. Perhaps not for everyone, but he is a 15 for me. And it's the starkest truth. Rhoda quirks her mouth to the side. I assure you, Alessandra, it is not just you. The king is most assuredly a 15. Perhaps I should have rephrased. No, attainable man is a 15. How very right she is. But I'm far from giving up just yet. Chapter 17. The next day is more bleak than the ones we've been having of late, with gray clouds blocking the entirety of the sky. The air is full of moisture and constantly threatening rain, though no drops have surfaced just yet. Despite the weather, I'm in a fine mood after the most recent letter from my father.
Alessandra, what did you do? Lord Eliades just withdrew his marriage proposal. He said rumors were abounding about you and the king. What happened? You know we were depending on this after your failure to secure marriage with the king. Now I will have to start from the beginning to find someone who will have you. Why must you be so trying?
I suppose word of my naked swimming adventure with the king got back to Orin. I'm so delighted to be rid of him. I wrap a thick shawl about my shoulders and head outdoors, thinking today to be the perfect opportunity to sneak away for some air. No one else is likely to be outside. Not in this weather. I take a fresh sketchbook with me and go in search of the gardens Callias mentioned his mother maintained while she was alive. As I round at the stables, an arm snakes through mine. I'd think it Hestia or Rhoda if I didn't feel the distinct muscles hidden beneath a copper-colored jacket.
Alessandra, Leandro says, I thought I saw you disappear outside. You aren't planning on abandoning us, are you?
I adjust my grip on my shawl so that I might more easily hold on to the arm of the most narcissistic man in the palace. With naught but my sketchbook? I ask.
Fair point. What are we to be drawing today?
It must have slipped your mind to ask me to model. I let out an unladylike snort. I don't draw people. I draw designs. For me to then sew.
And we're out in this chill because...
Well, I'm here because I thought the gardens might be a lovely place to draw inspiration from. I can't fathom why you're here.
I saw an opportunity to finally catch you alone. Any other time I try to approach you, Callias shoots daggers at me with his shadowy glare.
I hadn't noticed, I admit.
That's because you're so taken with him. But he's not here now, he says in a naughty tone. Tell me. When can I take you away from here again for another night of fun?
A sad smile rises to my lips. I like Leandros. He's ridiculous at times, but fun and kind. Not to mention handsome. His manners run a bit short, but he has to be at least a 13 by Rhoda's ranking. But he can't make me a queen. I'm about to open my lips, but Leandros turns and places a fingertip against them.
No. Don't say what you're thinking. I can tell I won't like it. Take some time. Wait for Callias to do something to upset you. Then come find me with your answer.
We come to a stop before an iron gate, through which I can see rows and rows of flowers. Leandros halts.
I'll leave you to your sketching. But do come find me if you decide you're in need of a model. Nude or not?
He gives me a wink before striding off.
Such a little devil.
But I find a wide grin on my face as I let myself through the gate. Brick-lined trails wend through patches of flowers. First, I pass by the roses. Each row varies by size and color. Some are all one shade, while others are tipped with pinks and yellows. They're cared for immaculately, with not a dying bloom among the plants. Farther along, I see beds of other species. Chrysanthemums and daffodils and tulips. But I don't go exploring just yet. I stop before one of the rose bushes. The petals a sun-bright yellow. They flare to the most stunning red-orange at the tips, and I can't help but stare at the individual blossoms. How they remind me of the flickering colors of fire. One flower hasn't quite yet bloomed, with just a few orange tips peeling away. It looks like an ember slowly extinguishing, growing smaller rather than larger, as I know the blossom will do. A dress takes shape before my eyes, a yellow gown with orange tips about the hem, individual petals pulling away from the skirts. Finding a nearby bench, I seat myself, flip open to an empty page, and move my pen rapidly against the parchment, letting the dress take shape.
May I join you? A deep voice asks.
His voice. I look up, and I can hardly believe that Callias has entered the garden. He looks so out of place with the black attire he's chosen for today, with the shadows surrounding his person. They don't seem to belong in a colorful garden. Demodocus trots along beside him, but as some idea gets in the beast's head, he takes off like a shot through the garden, jumping over a nearby hedge of flowers and giving out a loud yip. Probably spotted a rabbit. I turn back to his master. May I join you? He'd asked. Such manners. Leandros assumed he would be welcome. And whether Callias actually has any intention of leaving if I were to tell him so will remain unknown. I can't ever see myself turning him away. Not just because I need to win his heart, but because I like him, and I want him near me.
Please do, I say, and turn my nose to the empty space beside me.
He sits, keeping an appropriate 2 feet between us on the bench.
How did you know I was out here?
Or perhaps he didn't.
Maybe he wanted to go for a turn about the gardens, seeking the outdoors and potential solitude as I was.
I saw you out the window.
And you followed? Were you not in a meeting?
I was.
I look up from my sketch, giving him an inquisitive look.
I decided I'd rather be out here with you, and I cut it short.
Pleased, I return back to my sketch.
Are you designing a new outfit? He asks.
Again, I find myself pleased. Pleased that he would know exactly what I'm doing, because he knows what I like. I feel at a disadvantage, I tell him. You know my hobbies, but I have yet to learn yours.
Leandros mentioned fencing and riding when we went out together, but surely there is more.
Callias cups his hands in front of him and leans his elbows on his knees.
I used to enjoy fencing above all else, but since I became king, I have been unable to have a partner who wasn't made of straw.
Oh, I hadn't thought of that.
I do like riding and spending time with Demodocus. I have always been fond of animals, but even more so of late.
As if hearing his name, Demodocus comes bounding back over, tongue lolling out the side of his mouth. He sits before me expectantly, waiting for a scratch behind the ears. I oblige him.
What do you mean? I ask. I can't touch another human, but my abilities aren't affected by animals. Demodocus is the only companion I can have. Some days I even spoil him and let him in the bed.
I hadn't even considered that he would seek out contact in other ways. With his turned down head, a lock of hair sweeps over his brow. If he were any other man in the world, I would reach forward and smooth it back.
I used to play the piano, he says more quietly. Most everything I learned how to do, I learned from a tutor, but not the piano. My mother taught me herself. She loved music.
I swallow past a sudden lump in my throat. Is that sympathy? For him? Even softer than his utterance, I ask. Would you play for me sometime?
Do you like music?
I think I would like your music. He turns toward me, and just like on the first day we met, a jolt goes through me at the connection of our eyes meeting. The breeze flutters now, sending that lock of hair brushing against his brow. My fingers twitch, and I look down at my gloved hand. Slowly, so very slowly, I raise it, moving as carefully as I would toward a startled horse or a frightened child. I let my hand drift toward Callias, toward that lock of hair. His gaze shifts to my glove, and I can't begin to guess the trail his thoughts take. But I move at a pace that gives him what feels like all the time in the world to stop me. Instead, his shadows disappear. He solidifies before me, so that when my finger touches his brow, it doesn't go through. It meets warm resistance and brushes that lock back. Oh, but how I wish I could feel the exact texture of his hair. When done, I let my hand fall back into my lap, but our eyes are still trapped upon each other. Finally, Callias looks down at my sketchbook.
What are you making? A day dress. Something with pants?
His voice is deeper than it was before, I note, and it almost rambles, as though he's making up the words just before he says them. After a lengthy pause in which I'd forgotten that I'd held anything in my hands at all, I manage, a ball gown, actually. I was inspired by your mother's roses. I look up at the blossoms in question.
We must throw a ball then, so you may show it off once it is finished.
Could we? Oh, I've never organized a ball before.
Would you like to? I nod. You name the date, and we will make it happen. All of a sudden, I don't feel as though I need the shawl wrapped around my shoulders. I am so very warm and light. Once, there was another boy who made me feel this way. One who made me feel full and seen and loved. Now the bugs of the earth have feasted on his flesh. But I won't let Hector ruin this moment I'm having with the king. Something moves out of the corner of my vision. I turn, thinking perhaps it is only a flower stem swaying with the breeze. But it is much bigger, much sturdier, much more alive. Callias! I throw myself forward, but too late. A shot sounds before I can move, filling the garden's quiet, ruining its peace. Striking the king. Callias falls backward, his back hitting a patch of grass first, before his legs follow, slipping over the sides of the bench. I'm paralyzed to the spot, staring in horror at where Callias lies, his vest a deeper black right in the middle of his gut, where the fabric has become damp.